Here's a story called Yellow Blossoms by Ian Campbell from the Ormu Road in Belfast. Two elderly brothers, one living in the city, the other one still on the family farm, are both feeling the weight of the years and illnesses, and it falls on one of the sons to be their regular visitor. Uncle James had been a forbidding figure in childhood visits to the farm, but routine contact now in later life brings about a more tolerant appreciation between them. We had hoped, my mother and me, that my father would be released from hospital before Easter. Under pressure, the consultant agreed to let him home for 2 days in the Easter holidays, but said he wanted him back as soon as possible, as my father was an ill man and the stroke was only part of it. About 2 days before he was due to come home, I sat dozing in the heat and quiet of his room. He reached and took my wrist in a vice-like grip. "You won't forget about James. I think I have enough to do coming down here without going up there as well." His grip tightened, forcing me to look him in the eyes. "He'll need your help. It's not just me who's ill, and let's face it, I'll not be back at the farm any time soon. He's the only one left now. I know he's not an easy man, but he has a good heart, and I know he will appreciate it, even if he can't show it." He held onto my wrist until I mumbled some sort of agreement. He put his head back on the pillow, his eyes closed, content in the knowledge that had gotten his own way once again. I leaned back in my chair, my eyelids growing heavy again, and my thoughts drifting to my uncle, Samuel James. James was the middle brother of my father's family at 78. My father was the youngest at 68. There are 6 others, all male. All became tradesmen and left the farm once they were all time-served joiners, and scattered like hand-sown seed to Canada, USA and South Africa. Photos and letters were sent home in the early days, but faded with the passage of time. They never returned to the farm. James and my father stayed and worked the land until my father met my mother and they moved to Belfast. As a child, I remember going to the farm when my father went to visit. On reaching Bailey's Mills, our little baby Austin bounced over the stones in the Loch Lomond, while on the back seat sat a wicker basket half full of food, homemade soda bread and freshly cooked ham, a family packet of loose tea, and his favourite potato apple baked by my grandmother, who was a countrywoman from Kells. The end of the lane opened to a yard wide enough to turn a tractor. The house stood on the left, the outhouses forming a square and everything surrounded by fields. There was always smoke from the chimney winter and summer, grey and wispy in the summer months, dark and full of spark with the sound of crackling timber in the winter time. The two could greet each other with a nod. I was ignored. They would sit by the range and talk in low tones, with the occasional hiss from James as he spat into the fire, a trait I hated. I would leave the house at this point for some air. I would explore the outhouses, now disused and creepy. The old tack room, with worn harnesses and horses' collars, all mounted halfway up the wall on rusty chains that would clink as the evening breeze moved them. Thick cobwebs clung to the old wooden stalls and brickwork. I would wonder what size a spider lived in there. I would test myself and see how far I could walk into the deepening darkness. But there was always something real or imagined at the periphery of my vision. A shape skulking in a corner, a feeling of being watched from above by something clinging to the rafters, its sinewy body pressed against the corrugated tin of the roof. It was then my courage would fail me and I would run back to the light and safety of the house. At the end of our visit, James stood framed by the half door and raised an arm as the car pulled away. I felt the salute was aimed at my father only. He never noticed me and didn't seem to care. The feeling was mutual. A week had now passed, and still I hadn't been to see James. So to stop my father getting agitated, that weekend I put some food in the car and headed for Bailey's Mills. It had been a long time since I'd been to the farm. The Loch Lomond had gone from bumpy to potholed, except for the rise in the middle, which was high with tall grasses and green mould, which clung limpet-like to the loose stones. The briars and hedges no longer cut back, reached like thorny fingers for the body of the car. Then suddenly I was in the farmyard. The house was smaller than I remembered it. It hadn't been whitewashed for some time. The melancholy air of neglect hung over the building. A few wisps of weak smoke trailed over the Bangor blue slate. I lifted the latch and pushed open the door. James sat hunched over a low fire in a woolen cardigan, a muffler around his neck. "It's me, Robert, John's son." He half turned amid some kind of greeting, but I couldn't make it out. The creel by the range was empty. "Have you any logs around the back?" He nodded. I went outside and split enough logs to fill the creel. I could feel my forehead damp with exertion. Soon the sparks were flying up the wide chimney and the warmth was creeping over the quarry tiles to our feet. I made him a mug of strong tea and a soda bread slice thick with butter, but I noticed he had difficulty swallowing. "Is your throat giving you trouble?" He waved a hand to dismiss the question. "Have you any help? Does anybody come in?" He reached to the fireplace and gave me a piece of wrinkled paper. On it, the name and phone number of a family 2 fields away. I heard him croak, "A good woman." I copied the number down. We talked for a while about my father, but I could see it was difficult for him. I asked him if there was anything I could do before I left. He said something that sounded like "win." I asked him again. "Wind branches," he said, "with the yellow blossoms still on." Not wishing to ask any more, I went to the back field and got some whins with the yellow blossom. I split some more logs and brought both whins and logs and set them on the creel. "What are they for?" I asked, nodding at the whins. He just tapped the side of his nose and smiled. We said our goodbyes and I left. On the way home, the image of James stayed in my mind. 2 days later, I phoned Mrs. Patterson and explained who I was. She remembered my father. I asked what she thought of James. She told me he'd been ill for some time. His throat was the main trouble. Some days he could only drink soup. She had tried to get him to see a doctor, but he flatly refused. "He's very thin." "It runs in the family," I told her. "Stubbornness inbred." I thanked her and told her to ring me any time she needed me. I visited James a week later. As well as the food, I took him a half bottle of Blackbush whiskey. His eyes brightened as he laced his tea with whiskey. He was in better form. I asked him, did he want to visit my father? It was a waste of time, but I think he understood. I had to ask. The truth was, they would never see each other again. Before I left, I split some more logs, cut some wind branches with blossoms on them. I left again without knowing what they were for. My father had gone back to hospital, so regular visits to James was harder now, but I had managed to keep it all going. The visits to James had routine now. Sharing tea, a blackbush, splitting logs, cutting wind branches. We had gone from tolerating each other to accepting who we were. He was no longer the ogre of my childhood. I was no longer the smart aleck he remembered. Perhaps blood is thicker than water after all, and I was turning into my father with every visit. Phone calls late at night, never bring good news. Mrs. Patterson said she had noticed James was having real difficulty eating anything. She sent for the doctor, who sent him straight to hospital. I took down the details and thanked her. On my first visit to the hospital, he'd been moved to intensive care. He was fed through a tube, and all his vital signs were being monitored. It was 10 days before the inevitable happened. They said he died peacefully in his sleep. I find it hard to believe it was peaceful. There was now a funeral to arrange, and to keep all this from my father, who was sinking slowly with every visit. After James's funeral was over, I took one last look around the farm. Under the kitchen window there was a mound of dried-out tea leaves, and amongst them the washed-out shriveled heads of wind blossoms. At my last call with Mrs. Patterson, I gave her a bunch of flowers. We had tea and chatted. I mentioned the tea leaves in the dump with wind blossoms. She put her hands over her eyes and rocked slightly, then lowered her hands. Her eyes now moist. Poor James. She explained it was an old country cure, more folklore than anything else. The older generation believed boiling the yellow blossom and drinking the juice would cure a septic throat. It wouldn't cure what James had, but he wasn't to know that. The telling of all this to my father was taken out of my hands when he died 4 weeks later. He was buried in the same family plot behind the Covenanters church. With everything over, I walked to the entrance gate and passed the fresh grave of James. There was a mound of soil someone had fashioned a spray of wind bushes, the yellow blossoms standing out in the sunlight. I suppose some people regard wind bushes as weeds. I see them a lot different now, as did my father's generation. They had respect for the yellow blossom. Ian Campbell is married and has one son. This is the writer of that story. He retired 9 years ago. He started writing 40 years ago and still belongs to Ard's Writers, believed to be the longest existing writing circle in Northern Ireland. Over the years, he has had 7 or 8 stories published in Ireland's own magazine. In 2013, he had his book of stories, Tales from Titanic City, published. This is Barry Mack from Irish Australian Radio.